Everybody jump, 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 jump.
I said a hip hop, the hibbit, the hibbit of a hip. Hip hop, you don't stop.
Rap, 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 rap.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big circle.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Commissioner Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
Wrap it up. 836
on News Radio 923 AM 1620. Good morning. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Ben Scola Morning News, and it is the wrap. And we have half of our people here. That sometimes does happen. It's live radio. You have to adapt. So joining me in studio right now, I have Michael Kimbrell. He is the founder of Sean's Outpost. You might have heard of it as Satoshi Forest, or as he says it, Satoshi, I think is how you pronounce it, which is a homeless camp for about 15 people over on the west side. And then you also have he works at the Alfred Washburn Center. He is the director there. Very interconnected. We've had him on many times to talk about homeless issues, which is his zone of expertise. Michael, welcome to the Pensacola Morning News.
Thank you, Andrew. Nice to be here.
Great to have you in studio. The other, we're waiting on Caleb Houston for Huts for Our Friends. I know he had another engagement right before this, basically going from one thing to another, and I think he's actually driving on Davis. I hope he's driving, not with his phone in his hand, because that's Caleb. If you don't know Caleb, Caleb is always, he's always smiling, and he's always on Facebook Live. Like, his whole life is on Facebook Live. So when he gets here, we'll obviously add him to the conversation. So, Mike, one of the things I wanted to talk with you about, as you well know, and you know the homeless kind of task force that's been set up with a lot of the different agencies, and I know you've had kind of an on-again, off-again relationship with them. Let's start with that. Are you in the discussions now, or have you been participating? Have they invited you? I know for a while that was a question.
Yeah, so I sit on three of the subcommittees.
Okay.
And then I have also been asked to be part of the advisory committee.
Okay.
But I still, like you said, I guess I have a love-hate relationship with it, but I find it important to be part of that conversation.
Absolutely, and I'm glad you are. And look, you know, we have good relationships with all of the agencies that operate within that group. You know, the Waterfront and MANA and everybody who's doing things, or loaves and fishes, whatever. But I try to know everybody, right? And I think it's important to have all these voices. And I know your perspective is not always the voice of the institutional charities perspective, and so that's one of the reasons I like to talk to you. So I'm glad. That's encouraging to hear that you are actually involved in this now. Just your take, general take, do you feel like, I mean, I know Connie Bookman is very optimistic. I know the mayor is moderately optimistic. The goal, and there's a variety of goals, are, you know, widespread. But what's your take on how the progress has been with some of the things that you've seen on the committees?
So I've actually really welcomed this task force. Mm-hmm. I've learned a lot just in the meetings that I've sat in. I'm still... I guess I'm not as optimistic. I'm a little terrified. It's very easy to take this in a very authoritarian manner, and I'm hoping that we keep people's civil liberties in mind as we make these decisions.
It's sort of the, we have the right thing that we're going to do for you becomes the right thing that we want to do to you, and even if that's not the thing that you want, it's what we're doing. That concern.
Exactly. Yeah.
And which I think is a fair concern, because, you know, as you and I have talked about many times, the homelessness encompasses such a wide variety of people with such a wide variety of circumstances and causes, from people who desperately, deeply want help and are ready for it, and people who really don't want it and aren't ready for it and will be resistant to it, right? If you try to help them, that's just not what they're interested in.
Exactly. I usually would say that there are the people that we say don't want help right away still need our help. Mm. That's how we earn their trust. And when they have that moment that they are ready, that's when they'll come to us. But if we're mean to them when they're not ready, then when they do become ready, they're not coming to talk to us to get help. So we got to be there for them, even when they don't necessarily want our help.
We have to be available, or services have to be available for them and ready, and it has to kind of be done right all the time, because that leaves a mark, so to speak, and they remember.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, and we're waiting on that epiphany moment when when they're like, "Man, I need to get my life together," and we're like, "Yeah, today's your day. Let's do this." You know, so.
So I know you are very closely connected to, and sometimes we think of homeless population as like a thing, you know, the way we might talk about, what does the black community think, or what does the Christian community think, and the homeless population, and you tell me if I'm wrong, ever, you're always free to do that, is not a community, it's a collection of many people from different circumstances, living in different places all over the area. But particularly I-110 has become a focal point, obviously, because of what's going on there. You, I assume you have worked with some of those folks as well and been there. And, you know, I've had offers to go down, just haven't had a chance to do it yet. But why are people there right now? The mayor says as many as, what I think, 40 people since the beginning of the year have been transitioned out of there to other places. Why are so many people still there and seems like to be a growing thing?
Because it's become a mecca of help. Like, that's where the help is currently. It's got a lot of attention, so service providers are going down there providing assistance. And so those in our community that are homeless that are looking for assistance have started to travel there to to seek that help that they want.
Do we see people coming from out of Escambia and Pensacola hearing about it through networks that are even not here in the Panhandle, maybe, or elsewhere in the Panhandle, Alabama, anywhere? I mean, is it that kind of a draw, or is it really just more locally a concentration?
So I think it's got a local draw, but this is the time of year where we start seeing an influx of people from out of town, from up north.
Okay.
The survivability in the wintertime is easier down here. And so we're seeing a lot of people that are coming into town that don't know where to go and end up hearing about it and are showing up down there. But I don't think they're coming from, you know, Maine or you know, Colorado, hoping to, you know, live under a bridge.
We haven't become a homeless tourism destination or anything like
that.
So, okay. So you've obviously, you know that, Connie, and you, again, being on the subcommittees, you may be privy to things certainly that I haven't even heard of yet. But you've heard that her goal is November 1st. She thinks that November 1st is a feasible, doable, that camp will basically be as if it didn't exist anymore because everybody will be transitioned to some other location or some other way of helping them. In your opinion, is that realistic?
It can be. I don't know if it is.
Okay.
But I think we can do anything as a community that we put our minds to. But whether or not we have that political will as well as the community will to get it done, that's yet to be seen.
It seems to me like one of the – we're talking to Michael Kimbrell as we're waiting on Caleb Houston to get here from another appointment for the wrap. But it seems to me that – and again, you tell me if I'm wrong – we have a couple of shelter-style alternatives that we either rehabilitated, like the Salvation Army, or that we're trying to develop, like the Old Escambia Clinic on Palafox, that look very promising, and some of which are actually functioning. But we also seem to have the – if we can find another way to do camping somewhere else, or camping plus, like the Huts for Our Homes kind of concept, that – at least not all in that one place, in another place that might be safer – maybe out of the way, you know, out of visibility, some people might prefer. Am I reading the situation wrong in terms of what we're trying to accomplish?
I don't think so. The biggest issue I think we have under the bridge is it's too many people.
Sure.
Like with Shitoshi Forest, we try not to go over 20, 30 people. You like a school classroom, you know, it starts becoming unmanageable. The encampment underneath the I-110 overpass is now over 100 people, and
wow.
So the manageability of it is very difficult. So I think what we're trying to do is kind of split it up into a series of campgrounds that make it a little bit easier to manage.
So when you – it's sort of the density problem. Like, you know, it's not the fact that it's 100. It's that 100 all in together, and you get your unique problems of, you know, people in close spaces and people who might not be the greatest at social interaction, at least some of the time, or might have their issues with addiction or whatever, that creates its own sort of drama and trouble.
That along with the impact to the surrounding community.
Sure. So I know you guys have been involved in looking at some of the locations and trying to get a grip on, you know, what's going to work, what's not going to work. I want to ask you about that coming up in just a moment because I know you and I were talking yesterday and you gave me the impression that, you know, what seems like a great idea, you know, when it's actually a matter of putting it into practice may have certain practical restrictions. So we'll talk about that in a moment. In studio with me today, I've got Michael Kimbrell with Satoshi Forest and also the Washburn Center. And we're waiting on Caleb Houston, who should be en route and here hopefully any moment, fingers crossed. And talking just, you know, it's the wrap, but it's also talking kind of specifically about homelessness right now here in the Pensacola area. Good morning. Welcome Welcome back to The Wrap. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News, and I've got in studio with me, I've got Michael Kimbrell, who is one of the founders of Sean's Outpost, Shitoshi Forest, and also, it's going to be hard for me to pick up the extra H in that, and the Washburn Center, which is a day center that helps homeless people off of US 29, just south of Brent. And, you know, we're waiting on Caleb Houston, who's supposed to be here as soon as he gets here. I know he had another engagement, but one of the questions that I had for you, we were talking right before the break, you're working with the Homeless Task Force, you're trying to find solutions, you're working on at least three of the subcommittees, I think you said. One of the strategies is find another place for people to camp instead of I-110, which is supposed to be a park. I mean, it's a neighborhood, it's a park, it's visible, it's noticeable, and that's why it's kind of become an issue. But you were telling me yesterday that it's a great idea to find a piece of land, but that land has to work.
Exactly.
So if you're going to move people to these other places to continue camping just in some other location, tell me what they're finding. Are you finding good locations?
I think we're finding some good locations, but we're having to consider, you know, what is the flooding in the area, security, how's it going to impact the surrounding neighborhoods. So something that seems like an easy fit can end up ending up way more complicated than we originally thought.
So we saw this just this week. I mean, we had 8 inches of rain on Monday. It was massive. It was bad. You know, it was bad for us as drivers, you know, who live in our homes that are mostly protected from floods, but every once in a while see stuff. But how was it for the population? And also, I mean, did that give you evidence that maybe some locations wouldn't be as good as you thought?
It did. So Sunday I went out, and right after the rainstorm, the little rainstorm that we had, I walked an area that they had proposed to us, and it was roughly about ankle deep water through the entire area. And so as nice as the area was, it caused major problems because ankle deep water would go right into a tent.
Right. So it's it may be in a less rain, it might not be as bad, but you can't know that, and so that's certainly a concern. I mean, it's great to find land. The land's got to work. Hey, we've got Caleb with us. Caleb, good to see you. Glad to have you here with us.
Good morning, sir. How you doing?
Good, man. It's always good to see you. You always bring a smile to everybody's face.
So,
we were just talking to Michael. I don't know if you had a chance to listen in the car right over, but just been talking about some of the issues related to the homeless population. You obviously have had your own kind of innovative strategy with creating basically somebody bought you a building and they offered, hey, use it for this. Mm-hmm. I know the one key update a lot of folks might be wondering is where are you at on getting the sprinkler system installed? How is that coming?
It's coming along real well, Andrew. We're looking at the next month or two, man.
Great.
We've had to pretty much get everything redrawn up as far as measurements in the interior of the building. And now that we kind of got that situated, we can go ahead and apply for the permits and move forward.
All right,
absolutely.
Excellent.
Yes,
well, that's, I mean, I know there's bureaucracy is always a great fun.
Absolutely.
But the other thing I wondered about is I was listening to the conversation at City Council recently, and I think it was City Council anyway, and they were talking about what you have on your property. Now, I haven't been there in a couple of weeks.
Right.
Do you have some of the huts on the property,
sir,
in the parking lot in the backyard? What do you have?
Sir. Right in the front, we have 5 huts that are completed. We're looking at building another 2 this month.
Okay.
And so we're just staying focused on the process.
And are they inhabited? Are people in them?
Not yet. We're actually in the process of getting that situated this week and next week.
And is the plan that they would be living there in the parking lot, or would there be a transportation to another destination for the hut? What's the plan?
Yeah, well, that's where we want to start with things. We want to start there just kind of have more monitoring and just kind of give it a trial run, if you will, to see how it goes, and give the community an opportunity to see how that works when people are living in them. And eventually we will move them to another property.
Okay, and that's all good with code and zoning, all that?
Yes, sir. So we've discussed things with them, and right now we're still in talking about all the logistics of that.
All right, and you have, I assume you have people that are interested that want to be in them.
Yes, sir, absolutely. Absolutely. We got about 100-some people that's ready to, ready to move in them. So that's what we're talking to the city about as well. We just put our proposal in to see about getting some of that funding so we can get that gated community put together.
So one of the questions I had kind of for both of you is, it seems like the approach is a shotgun approach. You know, we're going to do this over here with the pallets, and we're going to do this over here, which is going to be a camping area. We're going to do this over here, which is to renovate a former health clinic, and then we're going to have Caleb's outfit with the tiny huts. And it's not a one-size-fits-all, and I'm just wondering, because I'm not the expert you are, do you guys think that's the best way forward, a lot of little approaches, or is there, would it be better for us to kind of think, let's do it this way across the board? What do you, I mean, well, Michael, Caleb?
What I like about Michael is he's straightforward, and the reality of things, me and him have experienced what a lot of these people are going through. Mm-hmm. And I think that because we have that knowledge and that understanding, that it would be smart, I feel, to give us the opportunity to kind of spearhead some of these things to get things established with the campgrounds as well as the huts.
Now, are you involved in the homeless task force at all? Have they brought you inside? No. Okay.
No, sir.
Well, that seems weird to me because again, I think I know you haven't been doing this for very long,
right?
And I know a lot of the our institutional partners are there is a sense that they've been doing this a long time, they know what they're doing, but I think you guys, you in particular, have been very active in the recent history,
sir.
So I would like to see that. I mean, have they even offered?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, okay. So
you
want to be involved, just haven't yet, or?
Well, right now we're on a standstill on making that decision.
Oh, okay.
Yes, sir. I do correspond with quite a few that are in the task force.
Okay.
So I have kind of an update weekly on.
So
what's
it's not
going
a
on.
No involvement. It's
right,
just a
right,
sort of
right.
Not official yet
right.
participation.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And Michael, your thought on the kind of, like I said, the shotgun approach of all these different ideas all over the area, does seem like the right approach to you?
It's definitely the approach that I'd like to see.
Oh, great.
I'm a diversity of tactics person, and so, like you said, one size doesn't fit all, and so we need a diversity of choices for the people in the community, because what works for me doesn't work for Caleb, doesn't work for you. So we need those choices out there. But then I also have kind of been a proponent against the huge one-stop shop idea, because for me that one is going to have a massive impact to whatever community you put it in.
Right.
But then two, I just foresee, a mother with three children and sitting in the waiting room next to someone that's going through detoxing and next to someone else having a manic episode. And it seems very chaotic and hard to maintain and control.
Because of the wide variety of people and their circumstances that are going through homelessness.
Exactly. And then you also, we would be creating a central point of failure. So if we had a flooding event at that one-stop shop, all of our infrastructure is now down.
Right. So one of the other, and I kind of had started to ask you this question when Caleb came in, how did the flooding and the intense rain, I mean, obviously if you're living in an area that floods, but how, if at all, and maybe it didn't, but how did that affect the homeless in our area? Is it mild inconvenience for them, or is this catastrophic problems for them?
I think that depends on the person and their situation.
Okay.
So if you have someone that has got a really well-established camp set up on pallets that the water can run through the underneath the campsite, they probably did okay. They just needed to dry out, hang out some things to dry. You go to the opposite end of the spectrum and someone's sleeping behind a building, it destroyed everything. It ruined everything they had. If they had documentation like birth certificates, that's now hopefully not completely ruined. And so it can be completely devastating to some people.
Very good. It's 8:55 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm joined in studio by Caleb Houston and Michael Kimbrell, two local homeless activists who are doing in their own unique way everything they can to help the homeless in our area. We're going to take a quick traffic break. Gracie Wolf has traffic on the fives.
On Highway 90 and Avalon Boulevard, we do have an accident, so seeing some slowdowns there westbound. Also, North W Street is closed in both directions, north and southbound, due to a train derailment. So we're seeing some slowdowns around there as well. That's going to be right near West Fairfield Drive. If you do see something else on the roads, though, give me a call, 850-262-6111. I'm Gracie Wolf with Traffic on the Fives.
Thanks so much, Gracie. So back to Caleb and Michael. I know this is, we have a lot of people that listen from all different perspectives. Everybody's got their own impression of what is homelessness and what these people are. And, what if you had to pick a thing that you think is maybe the biggest misconception that people have about the homeless, and I'm sure there are many. Michael, I'm sure we could do an hour on this, but if you had sort of one thing that you would want to let people know that you probably think they misunderstand about homelessness, do you have anything that springs to mind as your main thing?
Well, people say that homeless individuals want to be homeless. It's one of the biggest things that I hear. Also, they're lazy. They want to be in that situation, and that's farthest from the truth. I know quite a few individuals who have lost loved ones, you know, and they kind of lost it somewhere, disconnect somewhere. And mm-hmm. so that can lead to homelessness. The pandemic, you know, being out of work, you know, a lot of people are really desperate for housing. And so they have the finances to get a house, but just can't find anything that's affordable. You have individuals who have been on drugs and made some bad decisions. And so homelessness came into play. That's what happened with me, you know. So at the end of the day, I feel like people need to realize that, you know, it's not that, you know, people that want to be that way. It's things happen in life. And a lot of people are one paycheck away from being homeless themselves, you know. And we have to have more empathy and more sympathy, if you will.
I especially think of particularly mm-hmm. single moms
mm-hmm. yes.
That are often
yes.
just barely on the verge of mm-hmm. making it financially. And if something happens and you hear these stories about that's why they're living in their car.
Absolutely.
Is, you know, and you maybe don't see mm-hmm. them because mm-hmm. they're just living in their car somewhere. They find a place to park. But yep. that's the thing, too. Michael, you're mm-hmm. if you had to say, you know, maybe main misconception you think people have.
So I would definitely echo what Caleb said, that that is a huge misconception. Mm-hmm. I think in our community, when you say the word homeless, the first thing people think of is the panhandler on the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
And they're actually the minority.
Mm-hmm.
Most people that experience homeless don't look homeless. Mm-hmm. They're embarrassed to be in the situation, and they also refuse to be spokespersons for us, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, you're who we need to mm-hmm. come out and talk, like, yeah. so we can change the perception of homelessness. So, like, I ain't, my grandma will see that, I ain't doing mm-hmm. that, you know. And so we as advocates have a hard time changing that perception mm-hmm. Of what constitutes homelessness and who this affects.
It's hard to show the rest of us mm-hmm. that homeless people are often, and you know, some people find this word offensive, but you'll know what I mean, are often just normal people mm-hmm. who happen to be homeless for whatever circumstance. And those are the ones, as you say, that feel the most marginalized and unheard and ashamed and embarrassed mm-hmm. and guilty and all of it. And so they don't want to be out in front of the microphone and saying, you know, this is me. But those are the ones we kind of need to see, because that reminds us of who it is. Man, the time always goes so fast. Caleb, so glad you were able to make it for at least half of this, which is yes. thank you so much for coming
thank
by.
You,
Michael, thanks for coming by. And both of you, seriously, thank you for what you're doing in our community and for being voices, activists, and helping people live better lives. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
News, talk, traffic, and weather. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 WNRP Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.
It's 9 o'clock.
There was a deadly pedestrian accident this morning.